by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are grass make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We have just a really fine guest with us tonight from New York City. Greg Pallas is with us. Welcome, Greg Pallas.
Glad to be with you again.
Boy, I tell you what, tell our listening audience that's never heard you before a little bit about your background. Boy, you can tell it better than I can.
I'm an old-fashioned, for those who don't know Greg Pallas, I'm an old-fashioned investigative reporter. You know, going undercover, getting secret documents, you name it. That's, you know, the old-fashioned stuff, getting inside the file cabinets. And I do investigative reporting for BBC Television in England. And because, you know, we don't have investigative reporting in America anymore, so I have to go across the water. And I travel the globe, get the inside stuff, and bring it back. And I've just, a couple of bestsellers, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Our Madhouse, Vulture's Picnic, and now I have, and Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, and now I have out this week a new film on DVD or download called Vultures and Vote Rustlers, and it's about the billionaires and the ballot bandits who are taking our money and taking our votes. And it's kind of a fun, it's a deep investigation, but it's a fun story. You know, it's that's the main thing, is that I try to make serious stuff fun to watch.
So you're throwing a little laughter and levity in there to try to keep us from going stark raving
mad.
Yeah,
I didn't make you laugh. You probably burst into tears. So that's the thing. Is that
right,
so?
Yeah. Right.
So we have some great cartoons and we even in there and but good old fashioned investigative reporting. I started, for example, with something you'd really like out there in Texas on the real story of the Gulf and the Deepwater Horizon and BP, and I get I get a tip from a really scared guy who says when he watches the Deepwater Horizon oil platform blow up in the Gulf, I get this guy sends me a message. Look, I can't have to be careful, but it's all the way from the Caspian Sea on the other side of the world. He says BP already. This is not the first offshore oil rig explosion. This is the second one. They already had a blowout in the Caspian Sea on an identical rig, and they covered it up completely because you're talking about a nation called Azerbaijan, one of those things pooped out by the Soviet Union when it collapsed. And I call Azerbaijan the Islamic Republic of BP, where they paid $160 million in bribes to the president. They got an oil deal. And then when they had a blowout. Basically, they arrested anyone who would say a word about it, threatened everyone else, and BP covered up. But the U.S. State Department knew about it because the U.S. partners of British Petroleum were saying, where's our money from the Caspian Sea? And the State Department got BP to tell, look, we had a blowout, so let's keep it quiet. And then the same executives from BP, Chevron, Exxon, who knew about the Caspian Sea blowout, go in front of the U.S. Congress and say, hey, we never had everything's fine. We've never had a problem here. And then boom, it happens in the Gulf, but it happened before. Same thing, cement failed. Same thing. And, so I fly to the Islamic Republic of BP in Asia, Central Asia. And someone rats me out when I'm crossing the desert to the BP terminal to find witnesses. terminal.
And I get ratted out, so I get arrested.
Secret police grab me. BP has its own private army there with little oil wells on their badges. And I'm under arrest. And they take away my cameras. But they didn't realize that I had a pen. I had a camera inside my pen, just like Austin Powers. You get all of that. Of course, I got released, but you get kind of the slapstick and the horror of what goes on. Then we go on, you know, there's plenty of other stuff that happens from the United States to the Arctic in the film. I go all over the planet.
That's right. That's right. I always follow the money.
Who's making the money?
Now, I go after both parties. I go after the vultures, the billionaires who are funding Democrats and Republicans, and so I hunt them down. Where did they get this money? Why are they buying the White House?
Why are they buying the White House?
And so in one of the stories, I'm chasing down this guy, one of the billionaires who suddenly decided that we ought to have Chris Christie as our president, with the Koch brothers. I'm sure you've heard of the Koch brothers. And so, where does this guy, the guy who ended up with the Koch brothers, called Paul Singer, but he's known as the Vulture, because he rips off really poor nations. He holds them up for ransom and gets the U.S. government or others to say he will seize all the resources of some poor nations once he gets what he's demanding.
He'll buy up old debts people forgot about.
And often some of the stuff is done through bribery. So, for example, I go deep up into the Congo. I go up the Congo River, hunting one of his comrade vulture financiers. I go up the Congo River looking for evidence of who is trying to seize the gold and oil from the Congo. And it turns out the trail leads them back to Bosnia, Sarajevo, Bosnia. So I have to fly from the Congo to Bosnia, and I find out that a $3 million bribe has been paid to the Prime Minister of Bosnia. Then I do a stakeout in the snow at dawn, trying to find his vulture financier. He's got a house that's like bigger than Disney World, and I figure I'll get him when he's going out for his morning jog. The only problem was that it was one of the big snowstorms from the year before, so he wasn't exactly going to be jogging in the snow. And then I have a red car, and suddenly I see that there's a red car staking out his house. But then he gets to his office building in New York and has the signs removed from the office building, so I can't find him. Then I get inside and find out that he's hiding inside in the dark.
This is a billionaire, right?
He's hiding inside the dark, trying to get away from my camera. So you get some slapstick out of this, but these are the guys who pick our president. And who would pick a president for us? And, you know, they're on both sides. Behind Obama was J.P. Morgan. Goldman Sachs was a big supporter of Obama, and I do a story on them, and then I do a story on this guy, Singer, who's back, the Republicans now. And the Koch brothers, and there's a nice little, if you go to www.greatpolitics.com, you'll see a little bit about it, because the only way you can get this, by the way, is on the story, by making a donation to my not-for-profit foundation, and you can get it there. And in a few hours, I'll have a little trailer up.
You'll see that.
That's right. How do we figure that?
Well, you know, that's old.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's like, see, like Goldman Sachs was like one of the first big operations to put in a ton of money to Obama. But then they'll also work with Ted Cruz. Basically, they don't bet on horses.
Basically, they don't bet.
They buy the whole darn racetrack.
They buy the whole darn racetrack.
And that's the whole thing. So they're on both sides. And they're, you know, the main thing they're concerned about is
the
right for them.
You know,
Goldman Sachs got a massive.
Goldman Sachs got a massive.
It got picked up about $30 billion in U.S. Treasury and bailout
dollars
money.
In U.S.
Some of that doesn't have to pay back,
money.
By the way. About $10 billion, they're not paying back.
And
they don't have to
and,
under the deal that they got.
They don't have to. Under the
now,
that
Goldman
got.
Sachs was just an investment
now,
bank, which is basically a kind of casino.
Which is basically a kind of
and
casino.
Because you can't
and
give, you know, big banks like Bank of America were in trouble. They get bailouts because they're guaranteed, you know, we have, you have guaranteed deposits. No one has money deposited with Goldman Sachs. It's an investment bank, right? So what they did was, in 24 hours, they turned them from an investment bank into a commercial bank.
From an investment bank,
you know, like where you go in and have savings
you know,
accounts.
Like
you know, they literally just said, you're a commercial bank. That normally takes 10 years of work to get a commercial bank. They did 24 hours for the single purpose of handing them $30 billion.
Handing them $30
billion. And so there was a little problem for Goldman Sachs. They do a story where they find out.
They do a story where they
Goldman Sachs, if they're a commercial bank, they're required to give loans into their community where they do banking. Well, Goldman Sachs doesn't have a community. It has a big giant building at the end of Wall Street. You can't go in and open a savings account at Goldman Sachs. You can't go in. There's no ATM at Goldman Sachs.
There's no ATM at Goldman Sachs.
Because the law requires them to lend money, so they go, okay, go to this little local tiny community bank near Wall Street that serves poor people. Give them some money, and then that'll take care of it, right? Return for the $30 billion. You're supposed to give them money. So Goldman Sachs, for $30 billion, makes a $5,000
donation
to this little bank. Then they find out that the little bank is having a dinner, and they're going to Goldman's going to be thanked for $5,000 that it gave back. But they're being honored.
But they're being
not only
Goldman
Sachs will be honored, but the bank's biggest customer will be honored. The bank's biggest customer is Occupy Wall Street. The guys are trying to shut down. So
the
Goldman Sachs cancels and they take back their $5,000.
They
drive the little bank out of business because and they get $30 billion per month. So anyway, so I'm chasing them around. So I'm exposing how these guys steal billions from Africa. You know, and by the way, when these guys are stealing money from Africa, Africa doesn't have any money. It comes back from us, ultimately. They're taking the money we give Africa for AIDS medicine. You know, this is what we do. We give this aid money, and then these vultures snap it up.
These vultures
snap it up. Like I say, yeah. Yeah, well, and in fact, I'll give you one story that they try to crush. For those of you, if you go to gregpalace.com, you can write in gold or Barrett gold. Not many people know this, but George Bush Sr. was on the board of Barrick Gold Mining Corporation right after he left office. The first one of his last acts of office, by the way, was to give this gold mining company a federal a claim stake. You know, like the old miners, you get a claim stake if you just file at an office. For $10,000, they paid a $10,000 fee, and Bush authorized them to get a $10 billion gold mine in Nevada, just like the old claim stake. And so after he gives this company $10 billion, they hire Bush as soon as he leaves the White House,
Bush
Senior, and give him millions in fees. Then he helps them get a gold mine in Tanzania, in Africa. Now there are already miners at this gold mine in Africa. They call jewelry miners. Those guys have little, little tiny mines that they dig themselves with shovels. They pull out a little gold and they make jewelry. Anyway, they took over Bush's gold mining company, buying this property to clear the property for the purchase. They ran bulldozers across the property. They covered up
these
little
guys'
minds.
But they did this
mind.
In the middle of night when the
and
there were still 50 miners in those mines.
They
buried
50
people alive. I kid you not.
50
people alive were buried. This is a pretty grim story. I can't make up a joke around this one. And
they didn't care. It's like, there you go.
They didn't care.
You know, and
like,
so Bush's company got like a $3 billion gold mine. 50 people were buried alive. And they tried to crush the story. They sued my newspaper, The Guardian, Britain.
They
sued me, Greg Palast, personally. Or they tried to threaten me. I said, go ahead. But that was Bush. And I said, assuming the United States, and I'd love it because I could call Mr. Bush to the witness stand. He could tell me all about where he gets his money.
And
the blood on his money.
But you know, and then you know, and then,
but then,
you
think,
oh, but then,
well,
you think, oh,
see, the evil Republicans are grabbing the resource of Africa. You know who else was partnered up with?
You know who else was partnered up
with George Bush and his gold mining horror show?
Gold mining.
Andy Young and Vernon Jordan.
Andy Young and Vernon Jordan.
You know, our two favorite black Democrats.
Were
teamed up. It teamed up in raping Africa.
Teamed up in raping Africa.
And that's how it operates. Oh, we just got the DVD copies of Palace Investigates just came in. Real cool. So if you get, by the way, if you get the DVD, there's like, it's 2.5 hours of stuff, but the download's an hour. So it's, but you know, like I say, it's not all about blood and people being buried alive. There's a lot of cartoons in there. And a lot of good investigative reporting.
You gotta laugh or you're going to start being mad.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly.
You know? Well, sometimes humor, though, humor will hit at a deeper level of the psyche than straight facts.
Well, because, you know, you can't keep watching grim stuff endlessly. And, you know, I mean, I was in the Congo, you know, you'll see me in a cholera clinic and things like that.
Sure.
But, yeah, so it's a big grab. So, like, they're all, everyone's crying about Nelson Mandela. Yeah, they can't wait till they bury him, and then, you know, they probably are going to, like, dig him up because there's probably gold underneath, you know, because South Africa is filled with gold mines. These guys can't get their hands off that stuff. You know, look, when...
Well, who still controls all of the gold mines and diamonds? That's the big corporate.
Which one?
Right?
Yeah, De Beers and Anglo-American.
De Beers.
Anglo-American Corporation, and, you know, I mean, look, they're happy to let Mandela out of prison. As long as he said he wasn't going to touch the gold, he wasn't going to touch the diamond. You know, that was the deal.
Sure,
As long as, you know, they keep the, you know, basically it's the same, just like I said about the Bush giving away this $10 billion gold mine that's government property to his buddies. You know, they get the, they get the gold mine and we get the shaft. That's how it works.
Exactly.
So, you know, and so that's why, you know, so I do, I admit, even though it's grim stuff, I have a lot of fun. Even when I was under arrest, I have some fun. I knew I'd get out because, of course, being an American-British reporter, they're going to, you know, last thing they need is Greg Palast to be under arrest. That would give them some bad publicity. So they had to let me go. But, you know, but you get the real story. So, you know, you want to find out, you know, British Petroleum, they're crying now because they're paying, they're talking about how they have to pay lap dancers who lost their work or something like that. You know, well, hey, listen, everyone's got to work, right? But you get the real story. Not only the oil companies.
You know, the Guardian right now, the Guardian newspaper is being attacked because of the Snowden connection.
Yeah,
that right? Are you getting any feedback from your friends
absolutely.
UK?
I mean, I worked with the Guardian, you know, for years. I was a columnist for the Guardian newspaper.
Sure.
And we were the first to release the WikiLeaks reports and then Snowden stuff on the NSA. You know what? You know, the NSA was breaking the law. It's called the law. It's called the Constitution of the United States. So we're blowing the whistle on lawbreakers, and we're being told, oh, look, you know, first of all, the idea that Al-Qaeda doesn't know that their phone calls are being tapped is ridiculous, right? So who are they hiding this information from? They're hiding it from the American public. And today the NSA announced that they're going to change their program, but they're going to continue to log every
single phone call made in the United States. Every single phone call made in the United States. And that's what they're doing. And where in the Constitution, I thought that we had a Fifth Amendment. I thought, you know, that they could search our phones, listen in our phone conversations, log all our phone calls without a warrant. You know, so suddenly we're all suspects. I thought, you know, like after September 11th, we were all victims. September 12th, we were all suspects. When did that happen? You know?
Well, it sounds like the Napoleonic Code something.
Well, you know,
huh?
it's Soviet. Or, you know, I mean, even, you know, and that's the problem is that
yeah,
when
right.
It's hard for us to complain about Putin and his little nouvelle KGB that he's running out of the Soviet Union because, like he said, when someone asked, well, what did you say in your phone calls to the head of the Ukraine? This was and he said, Putin said this week, why ask me? Just ask the NSA. They know what I said. You know, so it's like, you know, so what's
right.
happening is that the only people kept in the dark are us. And that's why I'm trying to do this film, so you find out. To me, it's always follow the money. And even when I talk about, for example, one of the stories in Vultures and Vote Rustlers is about Mitt Romney. You say, well, who cares about Mitt Romney now because he got blown away? Well, there's a good reason to be concerned because I don't care about Mitt Romney. He's a joke, but you know he's still stuck in his car elevator with his dressage horse, so it doesn't bother me. My problem
right.
is the billionaires who are behind him, and he has a so-called. If you remember Mitt Romney's wife, Mitt Romney had a so-called blind trust. Well, it wasn't that blind. I got under the sunglasses there. And I discovered that Mitt Romney's wife, Ann, was given a deal where basically she was able to pocket, in other words, both Romney and his wife, pocketed $115 million off the auto bailout. And they did this secretly. And
yeah.
In fact, because they didn't report it, it was actually a violation of the law. I mean, so this is a crime. But here's my problem. The guy wants to make $115 million off the auto bailout. Well, okay. The problem was how he made it, the fact that he covered up, and the fact that basically a bunch of billionaires handed him a slice of the deal. The U.S. Treasury was ripped off for $4 billion. U.S. Treasury just sold its last stock at GM and took a $10 billion loss. $4 billion of that loss came from paying off Romney and his buddies. For the GM's auto parts division. And, in fact, the guy that negotiated for the U.S. said it was extortion. These guys were going to – and this is the game. This is the game that's being played where the billionaires have a new way. It's not just secret campaign donations. They are making candidates fabulously rich personally so that these guys – you know, so they basically own these guys. Completely, this is a whole new form of political corruption, which is to cut in these guys on special deals. It was kind of like, you know, the Whitewater thing that Clinton was accused of, which is that he was sliced in on a deal, but that deal lost money. So that was, you know, I guess Bubba there wasn't thinking too quick when he was trying to stuff the Whitewater stock in his pocket. He actually lost. But that doesn't work anymore that way. These guys are being given $100 million secret deals with sure-win inside stock deals. And that's a new way of owning these guys.
Right.
I'm going to bust that open. I show you how it's done. I show you the inside papers and everything else. And, you know, hunt these guys down. And if I have to wait outside their houses, I mean, that's one thing BBC lets me do. If you see Vultures and Vote Rustlers, you'll see something you never see on U.S. TV. I do stakeouts at dawn in the snow. I've got my Ms. Bad Penny here doing stakeouts and recon in the snow. And we wait out these guys. They don't want to give us interviews. They want to hide from us. I'll hunt you down and find you. No one does that in U.S. media. And that's what you'll see here. I mean, it's a real old, you know, if you like the Columbo, remember the TV show Columbo?
Yeah, there you go.
Yes.
That's
uh-huh.
what I do, except it's the real-life Columbo. And so it's a lot of fun, but it's also you get some good stories and some real information.
Right, on the vote part of that DVD, you uncovered some irregularities in Florida, is that
in
right?
In Florida
is that
and
true?
Ohio. I mean, look, the gimmicks that are being
yes.
played, for example, okay, in Ohio, people now vote early. About a third of the public now does not vote on election day. People either send an absentee ballot or they go to the polling stations early. Every state has this. And now about a third of Americans vote early. Well, I went to Ohio, and they were giving people waiting in lines for hours. This 2012. Well, what are they doing? They aren't handed ballots, which is supposed to be for you. You just go into early voting, you get a ballot. They were given an application for an absentee ballot. They waited another line. So these people are waiting 4 hours. They wait another line for an hour and get the absentee ballot, fill it out, stick it in an envelope. Now, why are they giving them absentee ballots? They're not absent. They're right at the polling station. And the answer is, well, people don't realize this. About a fourth of the ballots that are mailed in, your absentee ballot or mail-in ballot, are never counted. They don't count them. You put on the wrong postage. You sign, if you are registered and you have a middle initial on your registration form, and you sign it without the middle initial, they'll throw it out. If you fold it wrong, they'll throw it out. If you fill out an application and it says, you ask for your, like in Ohio, they ask for the license plate of your car. If you don't have a car and you left it blank, you lose your ballot. You have to write no car, right? And so they have all kinds of ways to get rid of your ballot. That's why they gave people these ballots, because they can choose which ballots to count. And remember, when you have an absentee ballot, they know exactly who you're voting for. They open it up and look at it and decide whether to count it. And so this is, I mean, and you're not talking a few ballots. You're talking $30 million were mailed in. And you got the politicians now opening up your ballot, looking at your vote, and deciding whether they count it or not. And no one's blowing the whistle on this game. It's really ugly. And it's deciding elections all over the place. And, and right now, it's mostly Republicans doing it, but there's Democrats too. I went to New Mexico, where you had on an Indian reservation, where natives don't have regular addresses at the reservation. Their addresses are like, two houses down from the post office. So they're not allowed you're not allowed anymore to use that type of address. You have to have a numbered address, an official numbered address. And so they give them what are called provisional ballots. But the ballots had to be put in a certain type of envelope. So all the Indian ballots were thrown out in this one reservation, the Acoma Indian Reservation in Mexico. So why are they thrown out? They're thrown out because they didn't have the right envelopes to put the ballots in. That's because they were given the wrong envelopes deliberately. And that was by a Democratic Party, even though Native Americans and Indians and Pueblos vote about 95% Democratic, but it was Democrats that stole their votes, because you got guys who were local Democrats who were trying to owned a uranium mine, and the natives didn't like that. So, this is the type of stuff that goes on all over the place. But it's always the money. That's why I said uranium mine there is the key thing. Gold mines, uranium mines, oil, financial manipulation, the whole thing. It's all about the money. It's not about the politics. People don't steal votes to win elections. They steal votes to steal the money. And that's the point of vultures and vote rustlers. All about the money.
On the hedge funds, on the money, on the securities that they purchased in Argentina, what is the status of that? There was a court case a few months ago. What was the outcome of that? Do you have an update?
Yeah, it's still going back
that?
And forth, because what's happening is, in fact, this guy Paul the Vulture Singer, who appears in my film both in real life and in his feathers, I turn him into an animated cartoon by Ted Rall. And where he's stuffing the beak of Chris Christie. That's why Chris Christie is such people think he's a big fat guy. It's not true. He just bloated up with all these billionaires' bucks, And Paul the Vulture Singer got a bunch of old bonds from Argentina. Ronald Reagan had cut a deal with the government of Argentina many, many years ago to wipe out their debts under, and they'd be paid back. Banks would be paid back at this on a special deal. This one guy has now come back 20 years later. Paul the Vulture Singer says, no, I still hold some of these bonds, and I'm going to, and unless Argentina gives me 100 times what I paid, which would bankrupt the country, I'm going to bring this country to its knees. So you either pay me and go bust, or you don't pay me and you go bust and I completely destroy you while you're busted. Real nice guy. And so...
Yeah, that's
so
a nice choice.
He's been trying to use the U.S. courts. He's been buying politicians of both parties. He bought up one guy called Congressman Massa of New York, who was a Democrat. I say was a Democrat, who got caught playing with the private jewelry of some of his interns. And so he was removed. So the Vulture lost one of his appointments in Congress. So since the Democratic congressman was booted out, so he figured he'd buy up a few Republicans. So he's hoping to actually, if he can get himself a president. So that's why he's been stuffing Christie with all kinds of money. He uses a front called Committee for Our Children's Future. And these guys don't have to declare their money, by the way. They put in millions and millions and millions without declaring any of it. They don't have to under the new law, as long as they create a front organization, Committee for Our Children's Future. And they've teamed up with the Koch brothers because the Koch brothers, people say, well, the Koch brothers complained that I said that they benefit from the XL pipeline if it goes through. And because they said, we don't own any of it. And that's true, they don't. They own the refineries at the end of it. They're the ones that will be getting the oil. You know, and they don't use it because they don't want to convert their refineries to use Texas oil. They've been using Venezuelan oil. And they could use, there's plenty of oil for those refineries. We don't need the XL pipeline. All they have to do is convert to use Texas oil. You got plenty in Texas. You got plenty in the Dakotas. The United States is an is as of like last month, the United States is now a net exporting country. We're now an oil exporting nation again. And what do we need? So why are we importing oil? Those so the Kochs can make $2 billion extra a year so they don't have to buy expensive stuff from Venezuela. But they won't use American oil. They simply refuse. It's too expensive for them. So that's the games that are being played. And, you know,
boy, I tell you what, that's bad.
It's bad, but it's, you know, on the other hand, that's why we have you, George. You know, it's like so that you tell the truth on them.
Right.
And you'd be surprised. When you turn on the lights on these cockroaches, they head for the walls, man. And it makes a difference. When we tell the stories, we often bust in. I mean, when I told the story of how the Vulture was going and stealing the this Christie's backer was going and stealing the cholera medicine money that the American people were giving to the Congo, he's taking that money. Throughout the Commonwealth, throughout the world, the laws were changed to block this guy. So, you know, we've had a lot of successes. And, you know, they can't steal all the money and all the votes all the time.
There have been recent reports out of the UK of student unions being closed down or being contemplated and planned to be closed down at the colleges and universities. And the cost of a student's tuition and cost of education over there is going way up to maybe $100,000 for the 4 year.
Yeah, I wish it were only $100,000 for the 4 years here. I mean, in England you had
something
like
that.
If you go to school college in England, it was basically free until this year.
Yes, at one time it was free, but
now you have to pay. But in America, it's gone completely nuts. I mean, I got to tell you, I didn't have to be an investigative reporter. I've got two kids applying for college now. And, you're talking at the University of California, of all things, you're talking about it's a state school, $50,000 a year apiece. You know, I'm going to have to be knocking off a 7-Eleven something like that. I'm going to have to, here, you know. So, this is what's going on. And so these, you know, and that's the other problem. These guys are picking up massive, massive tax breaks. One of the games that I busted in Vultures and Vote Rustlers, and again, you can only get it at www.gregpalace.com, and I know you'll have a link on your site.
Right. Yeah. What about these recent Snowden revelations and releases? They say he hasn't released the worst material he could yet. What do you think? What's your comments on that?
I can comment up to a limit because I work with the newspaper that has the material. Snowden himself.
Sure.
Snowden himself is not going to release anything while he's in Russia. That's part of his deal. Putin, remember we got Mr. KGB running Russia, and he's, you know, even though he's in a rivalry with Obama, they all agree that there's kind of a code that these, you know, the spy guys keep, that you keep each other's secrets, right? So he's not going to let Snowden let out anything. However, The Guardian, paper I write with, they have almost all Snowden stuff. And the British MI6 came into our offices, went into the basement, and literally took hammers and smashed the computers. And we said, you know, like my editor said, thank you very much.
Really? Smashing, much. Wouldn't that destroy archives and archives?
Thousands
and
thousands of dollars worth of computers and archives of our stuff, et cetera. They said, do you think we're that stupid that we would keep the Snowden material in our basement? So you just smashed a bunch of our stuff.
Right.
They literally came in with hammers and smashed the computers. He said, do you really think we keep it here? You know, and if we kept it here, do you think that we don't have any copies anywhere? He says, believe me, we still have the stuff,
right,
and it's
exactly.
Not even in England. You know, we've got it all over.
Right.
Believe me, this thing, just so you know, I'm not, without, you know, it doesn't give away much. I'm, you know. In fact, I think the whole thing about busting up our computers was just punishment. They knew darn well that we got the stuff all over the planet, all after, you know, so you can't, you know, you can, you know, seize one group of computers. And
I have a friend, and she saying that no, nothing government should be secret, and that way never get away with the thing, but that's never going to be.
Well, you know, it's our government. Who was it? Someone said something about of the people, by the people, for the people. And in fact, I think, you know,
we the people
are the first three words of the Constitution of the United States. It didn't say them the people, them the government, them the CIA or the NSA. It says we the people. It's our stuff. We own it. If I own a book, I want to be able to read it. I don't go to a library. The librarian says, sorry, but this belongs to the library. We have to keep it secret. No, I own the library. I'm a citizen. I can take out the book and read it. Okay, this is very, and I can tell you something. I've done, you know, for those who know Greg Palast, I've done investigative reporting a long time, and I've uncovered an awful lot of secrets, and I can tell you this. I've yet to find one single time where the government is keeping some great secret because they're doing us a favor. They're always keeping the secrets from us. Al-Qaeda knows that we're hunting them down. It's not a secret, okay? There's no secret there. In the WikiLeaks documents, endless stories of government cover-ups. I didn't find one when I went through the material. Not one single case where in the WikiLeaks documents we find a single thing in which the U.S. government was actually concealing something that we really shouldn't know that would really save us from terrorists. It was all the stuff about secret meetings and corporations. For example, when I tell you that, for example, the BP in Vultures and Boat Rustlers, show how, you know, I went out and got the evidence that BP had a prior blowout before the Gulf War, didn't tell us, hid that, lied about it. But the truth is that the United States government knew it because it was in the WikiLeaks document. So they're hiding stuff from us. They're not hiding stuff from bad guys. The bad guys have all the information, believe me. The bad guys know. The bad guys have the information. What they don't, what's in those documents, like WikiLeaks, the NSA documents, are stuff about us. And that is what they don't want us to know, what they're doing to us, what they're hiding and concealing from us. So I have that Wiki. I just show you the WikiLeaks documents in there. And I also have, secret documents from Larry Summers called the Endgame document. About it. Basically a conspiracy with the big banks, secret meetings, secret illegal meetings of big banks, U.S. Treasury Department under Clinton, which basically
set up the what is really the new globalization order, which led to the financial meltdown, the removal of all barriers between nations for the sale of financial derivatives. It sounds fancy, but it's about allowing toxic financial crud to slosh across borders so that when the housing market in California collapsed, Iceland melted. And then it came back to us, because who buys our stuff? Europe, Europeans. They're the ones with the money to buy our exports, and they imploded. And so, you know, that killed us, you know, I mean. So it's all this secret stuff. They didn't keep this. They didn't keep meetings with it was Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Citibank, J.P. Morgan, secret meetings with the U.S. Treasury, and Larry Summers. And I've got the documents now under the new rules. They can come after me. Used to be that at least if you released the documents, they couldn't touch you. But now it's like they're going after journalists. So this may be my last report, guys. For those who like Greg Palast stuff, this may be it. $1 trillion. And now they got a lot of ours because they were given the right to sell off all these properties and junk that the U.S. government had. When the U.S. government bailed out these banks, he picked up all this toxic assets and crap properties. And so,
Well, one thing I did in my research lately is that BlackRock owns 40% of Pearson PLC, which owns The Economist, and the Rothschilds are heavily invested in The Economist and Pearson PLC,
too. Well, Pearson PLC, they own, by the way, they used to own until a few weeks ago, they owned my publisher, Penguin Books, and this old big nasty publisher. I'm glad I kind of gotten away from them, but these are guys, So you just learned something here about information control. Pearson not only owns The Economist,
Financial Times. Well, even Pearson. Yeah, I drilled down into Pearson's PLC site a year or so ago, and according to their own proclamations and information, they provide 80% of the education materials in this country, in the United
States. Guess what? They just got fined yesterday for flim-flam with their educational materials. You know why they control 80% of the educational materials in the United States?
Because they're paying people off,
and
they
run a phony foundation called the Pearson Foundation. And it sounds like a nice little not-for-profit deal. So that allows them to go deal with school administrators and stuff like that. And then they're using this foundation to give people, like, luxury trips to Asia and Hong Kong and cruises. And so this so-called not-for-profit foundation was supposedly taking all these school officials from around the country and, you know, telling about new educational tools, and they're not supposed to be commercial. It turns out it was using all this foundation to reach these officials, giving them freebies, was basically then using that to sell them all of the Pearson educational crap that they didn't need, you know, new computers and programmed learning materials, which, of course, you can see how brilliant that's been in America. And so if you like our current educational system, where are they buying this stuff and who's paying them off to buy it? So that was busted yesterday by the New York State Attorney General, just hit them for about $17 million fine, which is nothing compared to what they've stolen. But, at least they got busted on one thing. But that's the problem. So you have to understand the corrosion that goes through all these things. When you hit Pearson, there you go. I mean, they're controlling educational material.
Right, exactly.
And plus, the educational material itself is selling their line. So it's like we're paying them for their propaganda.
Exactly. I mean, but these concerns are so large now. This corporatism is just gigantic in scope, isn't it?
It's
reach.
Gigantic. It's nasty. And the thing is,
it's powerful
and
nasty.
That's why
it's
fun to go and bust them. I don't like to.
I don't like to go bust the small guys. That's why I don't go after, 60 Minutes is like a joke to me now. It's always going after small fry. I want to go after the billionaires. That's why I go after these vultures. And, I want to go after the big boys. And so whether it's British Petroleum or Koch Industries or, the Paul the Vulture Singer, these guys, the big gold mine companies, that's what I like to go after. That's most fun. It takes me all over the world. People always ask me, it's dangerous for my sources. When I go to Bosnia, when I go to Kazakhstan, I was just in Kazakhstan, I have to be very, very concerned about who I meet with and where I get information, because I leave and these people end up in dungeons with their fingernails being pulled out.
I've got a question for you about Venezuela. Mm-hmm. Maduro
yes.
is down there, and he seemed to be trying to put restrictions on retailers and trying to force them to knock their prices down. Is that going to just destroy the retail sales down there and push everything into the black market?
Well, I think both things. I think that it won't destroy the retail section, but will there be a lot of black market sales? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, Maduro came up to visit me a couple of years ago before he was president. And so what's happened is that there's been a lot of embargoes of goods into Venezuela, because we've had this low-level Cold War going against Venezuela, because they've been charging the Koch brothers $101 a barrel for heavy oil. They're really cranking the price on the heavy oil that they sell to the United States, which again goes back to the XL pipeline, because the Koch brothers want to stop their dependence on Venezuela, because Venezuela is charging them a premium for their oil. And so in retaliation, cutting off sales into Venezuela of luxury goods, so the government has cranked up taxes on it, so then you end up with a big black market. And as soon as you have restriction, you're going to have some merchants who are cranking up the price and profiteering. You're also going to have some merchants who are stuck buying the higher price, so they have no choice. So some merchants have no choice. They have to raise the price. Some are just profiteering. And, the usual problem, the government comes in and says, okay, everyone has to cut their prices. Some guys, that's fair because they've been cheating, and some guys just get wiped out. And that's always the problem with that kind of mucking around at the retail sector. Because the real issue is always oil. When it comes to Venezuela, it's one issue. It's like, who controls the oil, who gets the oil money?
Right. I was digging down a number of years ago into Hugo Chavez and who contributed to his campaign initially. And it was BBVA out of Spain that gave him $1.5 million in 1998 and 99.
Yeah, right.
And they're the second largest branch bank in Venezuela today.
Yeah, well, the thing is that you're also talking about oil companies. Like, for example, the French company, oil company Total, pissed off Chavez so that in the end, Chevron got their reserves. So what's happened is that you guys, that it's just like in the U.S. when people play, just like I was telling you about how Goldman Sachs became, suddenly they put fairy dust on them, and overnight they went from a investment bank to a commercial bank so they could qualify for bailout money. Well, that costs a lot of bakshish. I mean, and it was interesting because both parties, Obama got a ton, and so did the Republicans running it. And of course, the kind of cross characters like Tim Geithner, he's kind of both Republican and Democrat. And so we see it in the U.S., we see it in Venezuela, we see it, it's all over the planet. As everybody's on Kazakhstan, people complaining about Karzai, the president of Afghanistan. I got to tell you, I know a lot of heads of state. He's probably one of the most honest ones I've ever met. And believe me, I've met Clinton, and there's no.
What is the dope connection over there in Afghanistan? Is that still?
Yeah, well, the one thing that happened is that Karzai's brother was the chief drug smuggler in Afghanistan, but I can't blame Karzai, the president, because he and his brother were at war over this, and his brother said Karzai, the official president, I run this country. Because, Poppy is more powerful than politics. And so then Karzai's brother suddenly ended up dead. And but it's you know, it's the poppy trade is still picking up. A lot of it's moving, of course, to Laos. But
there was another. There was an air crash recently in Hawaii, and the lady on the plane that died had released that long form on Obama's birth certificate. Is that? Is there any suspicion there?
I don't know anything about that one at all.
That just happened.
I don't know that one. You'll have to fill me in. I don't know it. But yeah, so I've investigating all over the world. I would love. Hey, listen, do me a favor. Let's you and I take a do an investigation on why. I'm up for that. But it beats Kazakhstan and the Congo.
Okay, let's get back. Let's get back to one of your stories in the video, the hidden story of BP's Deepwater Horizon blowout.
Yeah.
Is it? Someone said there's a fissure down there that's still leaking in several places. It's not just one place,
but
it's still leaking.
One of the problems is that you have a very unstable geologic zone there, which is filled with methane, frozen methane. Way down under high pressure, it's like ice, but it's made out of methane gas. And by even going down there, this is one of the reasons why there's a lot of questions about going into that particular area, the Macondo area. It's because of all this frozen methane, and we don't know a lot about frozen methane. And so we start drilling into this stuff. Well, you know what happens when you drill into, if you take a hot drill and drill into an ice cube, it starts cracking, shattering, melting, and that creates all kinds of other cracks in the ocean floor. And so while BP will say things like, well, that's just natural Mother Nature, you know, natural gas leakage. Well, would you have that if you didn't go into, you know, dangerous zones? I mean, you start, it's like anything else. If you're drilling on, you know, if you're drilling in the street and you're over a soft area or something, you're going to fall right through. I mean, that's why, you don't do stupid stuff like that unless you're, you do it because you're greedy. And I, one of this, again, the story of that we have in Vultures and Vote Rustlers, it's called BP in Deep Water. I went all over the world hunting BP. I went up to the Arctic. You'll see in the extras in the DVD, for example, I'm in, literally inside a whale eating whale meat up in the Arctic with Eskimo.
Man. Oh, that's cool.
Well, cold. Not just cool, but extremely cold.
Cold and cool. That's cool.
By the way, have you ever had a chance to eat whale meat, George?
I can't say, Greg, I've done
that. If you have a chance, don't do it. It's really as awful as it sounds.
Okay.
And,
Hey, I'll take your advice. I believe in you.
Yeah,
advice.
And it's like, but, you've got, so now, George Bush was being, slapped all over the place because he wanted to drill in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge in Anwar, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which is an Eskimo area. And, then Obama gets elected, Mr. Greeny. He says, okay, we're not going to drill in the refuge. We're going to drill offshore from the refuge. Like, I want to say offshore, like 50 feet offshore, and then further out into the Arctic Sea. You have a problem in the Arctic Sea, man. You have a BP-type blowout. That crap goes right under the Arctic cap to Norway. So that on one hand, Obama's being Mr. Green jeans. And on the other hand, the Eskimos say, well, it's better to drill in the wildlife refuge where at least it's soft land, but it's land. If something goes wrong, it stays in one place. But if you drill into the sea, and so they were, they are screaming mad, but no one's going to care about what the Eskimos think, I'll tell you that. Except for one thing, they've been known to punch a few holes in pipelines, so I don't know if they're going to be completely ignored.
Right. I have your comments and your advice on Fukushima.
Yeah.
I know you've had some nuclear power
background.
And what would be your comments right now on Fukushima with what we know about it at this time? I know it's very dangerous. It's ongoing, and it's becoming a real threat not only to the Pacific and Japan, but to our West Coast and other places in this country.
I think, because I did work for many years as an investigator of the nuclear industry for government when we used to do investigations of bad guys. Now we don't. But the problem with Fukushima is that you're releasing radioactive isotopes into the air. Now, how much comes to the West Coast, especially the Seattle area? Some. You know, how many people will eventually get cancer from it? We don't know. You know, you don't, it's hard to say that isotope from Fukushima got that, you know, gave that kid melanoma, you know, or you know, some type of a lymphoma cancer. So it's hard to tell. We have a lot of studies which work statistically, but, you know, it's a continuing problem. It's releasing, and plus, they've admitted that they've let radioactive water drip into the ocean. And you've got it in the Gulf Stream, you know. So, and that's from one plant, you know. I mean, it's kind of nutty. And these guys, look, they're making a killing on this stuff, on this phony stuff. Obama's approved 4 nuclear power plant stations in the U.S. With, let's see, you've got, and they're talking about a $56 billion guarantee for the nuclear industry. I don't care whether you're for or against nuclear power. This is about nuclear power. This is about political power and dipping into the U.S. Treasury. It's a bailout in advance. It's a bailout in advance. $56 billion loan guarantee from the Department of Energy. You know, that's our, you know, if nuclear power is such a great idea, go ahead and pay for it. Why are you asking me to guarantee your loan if it's such a good deal? Why should, you know, I mean, that's
right.
And by the way, the first plant, the very first plant that Obama approved for building in the United States, the first time in 30 years he had a plant approved, was South Texas, which was going to be built by, are you ready for this? Tokyo Electric Power was going to build 2 nuclear plants in the United States. And the reason that Tokyo Electric Power was chosen, according to the press release from the Obama administration and your local power pirates there in Texas, is that because Tokyo Electric Power has such great experience, safe experience with nuclear plants. This is just this was literally months before Fukushima went. So, you know.
I think that was to expand the Bay City existing
right.
nuclear, and that we're part of that often. And that was in Ron Paul's area.
Yeah, I mean, you had basically already have 2 plants, you know, which would cost a complete fortune. Yeah. I mean, those, you know, you're talking about $12 billion for those 2 plants. And Tokyo Electric Power is going to add 2 more reactors, and you know, but
I know. Well, they canceled out with $300 million in losses.
That's right. Since Fukushima went, Tokyo Electric Power was forced to get out. Needless to say, and who got hit? Who's going to pick up that? You know who's going to pay. You know who's going to pay for that $360 million that literally went into a hole in the ground. Literally a hole in the ground, and that's where that money went. And that's at the down payment on the bailouts to come in nuclear. Now they're going to do one in Florida. They're going to do 2 plants in St. Lucie and Florida. They're going to do 2 in Maryland. You know, and who's paying for this stuff? You guys think it's a good idea? Go ahead. Invest as you wish. Okay, we can talk about whether they're safe or not. I want to talk about whether they're financially safe. You stay out of my, you know, don't irradiate my bank account. Okay, that's what you start with. And that's what's happening here. These guys are making such, they are buying the, they're basically trading politicians like bags of sugar. And that's what I'm trying to bust in vultures and vote rustlers, how they do it.
Well, we thank you for, we thank you for being with us, Greg Pallas. We've got about 30, 40 seconds left. But thank you very much for being with us this evening. Any last little comment here with 30 seconds?
Go and, you know, I'm a nonprofit operation, and so go and join me.
GregPallas.com.
Okay, thanks a lot.
We'll put it up on our site. But thank you very much for being with us. We thank you a lot
George,
for your work. Okay, thank you. Good night.